Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, everyone. This is Mary Lurson from the NAMM Foundation, and I'm here with a wonderful longtime friend and colleague, Steve Vins. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Mary.
First of all, tell us where you are today and a bit about what you're working on today.
Well, I am in Los Angeles, where I'm actually working at this moment for Little Kids Rock. I shouldn't say this moment. I actually started working with them in August. I know that you know something about Little Kids Rock, but I can just tell you a little bit about what we do if you want.
Absolutely. I certainly do know quite a bit about Little Kids Rock. You know, NAMM Foundation was so honored to be one of their very first funders. Tell us a little bit about Little Kids Rock and what you're going to be doing with them in your new capacity.
I knew Dave, the founder, like I think it's been 18 years almost. This was when I was the music administrator for Los Angeles Unified School District. And Dave called me up. He left a couple of messages for me saying he had this amazing program in this guitar curriculum. And at the time, the teachers in the schools in LA, several of them actually started to teach guitar and give guitar instruction into their schools. And they were coming to me saying, hey, we need guitar curriculum. We just don't know where to go, where to get it. We're just struggling to give this type of instruction to our kids. So when Dave had contacted me, it was perfect timing because he was able to help, as they say, feed the teachers with like his curriculum and the PD. But this program has like been built up over, gosh, like I said, 17, 18 years, or this nonprofit organization in music education. So I was recruited to be the chief program and chief academic officer for Little Kids Rock. And so what they mainly do is they provide professional development to the teachers throughout the country. They have different initiatives. They have one in Miami in particular that they're focusing on this year, one in the state of Maine. And then they have a strong foundation in three major cities in particular, like New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. But they also, I think the couple of things that people should know is that they do provide the curriculum and they provide updated like curriculum and instructional materials on their online website. It's called the Jam Zone, and teachers could actually go in there and get materials for free. There's no charge at all. Another thing that they do is they provide instruments to the teachers who receive the training. So teachers don't just get the training how to use the curriculum, but they're also given the tools to go back into the classroom and like actually do the training. The last part I would say, which you and I saw each other, which was at the Modern Band Summit out in Fort Collins, this national conference that they put on. It's a professional development conference or symposium, but it's very unique. It's not like a typical, I would just say it's not a typical music education conference, and it's definitely not a typical education conference, because the teachers, you know, they had about 650 teachers out there and they're like jamming away. So they're going to these sessions during the day. And then at night, there's just everybody's making music and having a great time. Someone approached me. I forgot the name of the person in the organization. But anyway, someone came up to me and they said, this is crazy because it feels like a Tony Robbins seminar in music education because everyone is just so pumped up and re-energized.
Thanks for that overview, but it really feels like you've, from that first meeting in the first year or two of Little Kids Rock, it's like something has come full circle here that you've now, that organization has matured and grown and developed so wonderfully. And as you said, it has this sort of landmark summer experience. And now here you are really helping to lead the organization. That's really, like I said, there's this kind of a circular feeling here. Really,
right.
feels right to us who have supported the organization all along and also are supporting the summit. So, but you know, I'd like to roll back time a little bit. Tell us where you were before with your work with Orange County. I just would like to share that with our audience as well.
So I was the arts administrator for Orange County, as you know, Mary. Just to explain that a little bit, because it's a weird structure in California compared to the other states. Orange County Department of Education is located just south of Los Angeles County. It's a county office of ed, which means that in California, the way it's designed structurally in education, you have the Department of Education, California Department of Ed. Then you have a county office of education, and that's an umbrella entity over the school districts in the county itself. So if I were in Georgia and I worked for Fulton County Public Schools, that would be the school district. That's not what it's like in California, because California is so big, they've created the second tier entity to help support, I guess, the state level Department of Ed and then the school districts.
So essentially you're there as a service entity to all the school districts in that county. Is that a way to summarize it in simple terms?
That's the best way to put it. That's exactly it.
So then you're providing sort of guidance on the state policies and then how what funding is available and how it can be used, professional development, all of that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly. So that what we would do is, like, my goal was, so we had 28 school districts in Orange County. At the time when I had taken on this position, we were coming out of the recession, and two things were occurring at the time in California. One was that Governor Brown had restructured the funding formula and the funding structure for all of education in California. And with that taking place, he had eliminated all these categorical funds, which made it really hard for school districts to figure out how to use their money because of all the strings attached. So he eliminated all that, gathered up all the funding, sent it out to the schools and saying, you have to decide how you're going to spend your funding. And at the same time, we're giving you increased funding. And the third part of this is that you have to put together a plan and everything has to be transparent. And it was so monumental because school districts at that time, they were empowered to do things that they weren't able to do before. And in Orange County at the time, my predecessor had built this partnership with the Boeing company down there. And you know, the thing that I found out, what I learned was that because Boeing works on so many top secret projects with the government and everything else, that they need to hire employees in the US and they need to have employees who can think creatively, right? To work within a team. Rumor has it that they did a little research on the employees who were probationary employees. And what they discovered, that those who went on past the probationary period, who stayed on at Boeing, had some sort of background in the arts when in their education. So that was one of the reasons they invested in that.
So, and you and I are just going, yes. So thank goodness they did that, because they did the right thing for their company and they did the right thing for their employees and they did the right thing for the world, right?
Right.
So all this, you described to us this tangled web of education bureaucracy, you know, I mean, you just kind of described it. And then you have a strategic partner in the one of the biggest aeronautical entities on the planet, or probably in the galaxy. That in itself has a whole web of responsibility and strategic partnership. But then along came something else that you became a real expert in. And that's something that's touching every school district in America. And that was the new federal education law, the Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA for short. And in there was this Title IV Part A program that now it's over $1 billion in funding of, I guess, about 20% of it, right, can be used for well-rounded when you just look at the sheer math of it all, probably even more. And then to give our listeners a little context within the bill, well-rounded means music and arts education. So along with some other subjects too, of course, but in other words, there was a validation. So you kind of once again sort of pivoted and turned and became in your role in the Orange County Education Office, an expert on Title IV Part A to help school districts pull those funds down for well-rounded education, which is, as we know, code for music and arts education. First of all, how did you personally tackle what Title IV Part A was and what it could mean for the school districts that you're supporting? And then kind of what happened after that?
You know, I've been following the policy of what's been happening at the federal level and working with Americans for the Arts, with NARIC a little bit on other projects, but also staying informed with what's happening through them. Also with, you know, being in touch, a great person who knows all of this stuff inside out is Lynn Tuttle. And Lynn and I have known each other for many years when she was at Arizona or in Arizona at the Department of Education. She's very much like I am in a way that we're both, we can totally geek out about all of the policy stuff.
Yeah, and we were working on this for a long time, right?
Right.
I mean, there were, you know, NAM was very much on the front lines of its advocacy with NAFME.
Right.
And, you know, there was that quiet multi-year energy that was devoted to this. And then all of a sudden, and not all of a sudden, but felt in December 2015, it happened.
Right.
And then we had to go after the money, and then we had a little bit of money, but now we got real money in that program.
Right. Yeah, I think the first part when I saw it was like $450 million for 50 states. At that point, I was like, well, why even consider this? Because that's not even like worth talking about. It's a lot. $450 million is a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not.
And yet, you know, we stayed at it and now we're at, I think, $1.2 billion.
Yeah. I think that's now you can have real conversations about what to do with this funding.
So I want to go back again. So you were watching it really develop and then it was there and it was sort of non-consequential because it was a small amount and it was just, I think, sort of wrapped into the state funding that trickled down. But then all of a sudden you decided that because the money maybe grew a little bit, you decided maybe we need to pay a little more attention. What was that evolution for you?
So tying back what I was talking about with Boeing, what I learned from that experience with the partnership with Boeing, and at the time we were ramping up the funding, outside funders like Boeing, other organizations, they ultimately don't have the money compared to what's really in education. So the key is to use their funding in a way that could be really smart to get the people in school districts to really make that choice of spending more money in arts education and music education. So we did things with Boeing where we brought in all the superintendents at this time, and they had funding for, we brought them in, we had them show up at the site in Boeing. We did a grant process there. We gave them some money to ramp up arts education. I was working with Arts OC with this as well. And what we ended up doing, all of this leveraged, I mean, we use that word all the time, leveraging. That investment leveraged school districts. And over 3 years, we saw this thing. Because the budgets for school districts were all of a sudden transparent, you could actually see they were hiring arts administrators, they were hiring music teachers, they were spending money on instruments and supplies. All these things were being ramped up, where we saw the school district would supply a three-year plan. The first three-year plans in the school districts added up to about $23 million. Then we did a few years and we analyzed like what had been the growth, and it went up to $92 million.
Just in arts education.
Yeah, it was over 3 years that they had actually put into their budget. They had folded in whether it was going to be STEAM instruction or specifically music instruction or whatever it is. We saw this huge growth. And here's the thing that was really I would say kooky in a weird way, is that Title IV Part A, even though it was $450 million, ultimately states, those states that did these grant programs with that first year of funding, like California did, we were able to actually apply for this grant. We got, like, in Orange County, we got like $1.4 million. And that was just Title IV Part A funding just for arts education, music education.
You know, so many things that you're saying here are so significant because, you know, Boeing is the monster that it is. It could never do what public education dollars have to do for arts education for every child, right?
Right.
We have to look at our funders in the right way. And yet they had the power to convene, and they had the power and interest to bring people together. And then this energy got started. It was almost like there was a little bit of a local coalition that was developed among the leadership of those school districts. And if Boeing thought it was important, well, they kind of validated that a lot of people do think this is important. And then the support that you provided through the county office there created some pathways by which actually some things could get done. You know, and I think the reality of, you know, the State Department of Education requiring these planning process. Without that 3 year of planning, probably the bigger Title IV funds coming down would have not even had meaning if that intentionality hadn't been moving.
Right.
People have to be moving and looking in a certain direction for what they want for kids. And that local advocacy really built that.
Totally. And I think with the Title IV, one of the things that we worked on now with the funding up to $1.2 billion, there are some key things that I worked on with my relationships, not just within Orange County, but across the state. I've had people contact me in terms of like how to approach it within their school district. And some of the things that immediately came to mind is, one, when you talk to a school district in particular, they're still, even though we've been in this is the third year with this process of Title IV Part A, they're still wrapping their brains around this. Some of them really know what's going on and how they're applying this funding, but some don't.
Well, our big job, and you were with us with all of this at the beginning, really 3 years of devoted advocacy to train the grassroots, to train local advocates, to train principals, to train teachers, to train music educators on what it was and what the process was to go have conversations about the money. And you were with us for a lot of that, guiding and helping. And we just had a gathering of the Support Music Coalition this last summer, and we did more role playing in the meeting about it, how to go have the conversations. You're not going to write the grants necessarily. You're not going to be able to call the State Department of Education about how much money is available, even though all that info is out there. But having the conversation as an advocate to pull those monies into a school district is one of the most important roles for an advocate now. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting in terms of advocacy as being a good citizen. So you're not going there. If they're saying, let's say it's a small school district and it's $40,000 in Title IV Part A, you're not going to go in there and say, well, we want to use all $40,000 for this. Or, you know, it's understanding that, A, you can't do that because it's that money is divided up. You got to spend it 20% in one area, 20% in another area. There's no minimum amount in the third area of technology, but you do have to spend something in technology. So if you understand that structure, then you start to understand like what you can ask for.
And all of that information is available on our partners' websites. We relied on NAFME, the National Association for Music Education, to build the Title IV Part A toolkit. There is such great direction and information and frequently asked questions to help you start the process of having these discussions in the local district. Well, you fought the good fight. Are you still advising districts on Title IV Part A or in Little Kids Rock? Will that be part of your role as well, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think even though I'm working with Little Kids Rock, I think I just personally, and I know this is the, I know that, and talking with Dave and everyone who's there and working with people outside, you know, my friends from throughout music education with the other organizations, I think we're all in the same agreement that we haven't nailed music education in the United States. It's all hands on deck. So at the end of the day, we need everybody to be involved with it. Of course, I'm still working with it. I would say, Mary, there's one other thing that people are unaware of, and particularly school districts are going to be unaware of right now, or they might be unaware of. With Title I monies, what tends to happen is if you don't use that year's pot of money, then you have this leftover funding that you have to decide how the state has to decide how they're going to use it, or the school district's going to decide how they're using this leftover money. It doesn't immediately disappear and go back to the feds right at June 30th of that year. So the funding year of a school district typically is July 1 to June 30th. It's not calendar year. The second thing is, so as July 1 kicks in for the next yearly fiscal cycle, or whatever you want to call it, there's going to be leftover Title IV money, because it's very much like Title I money. So one of the things your advocates could actually start doing is asking, so what's going on with the money that's rolled over from the previous year that's left over?
That's a great kind of call to action, because, we're seeing that. But if you're not, again, we talk about the basics of advocacy. If you're not paying attention, if you don't know that the money is there, if you're not participating in conversation with school leadership about these things, you won't know to ask the question, right?
Exactly. And I know that Lynn and I were on a conversation. She put together I think three or four of us put together to have conversations about this. So I know that she's focusing on like putting together some sort of thing to help guide the conversation too.
Yeah, I think that's already up on their website. I really encourage people to go to NAFME.org and click on the advocacy button, and then follow the trail to Title IV. Just tremendous information, and very accessible and very interesting. You know, again, you can let the wonky stuff to people like Steve and I, who just like can't wait to get up in the morning and read a white paper about this. But at the end of the day, you know, it's been synthesized down so it can be really usable by people in a district, so they can have a conversation.
Like you said, you don't have to know all the gory details, but go to an advocate. Maybe it's the music administrator in that school district, or maybe it's the department chair who's also helping to oversee the school district in terms of those funding or the funding sources. Have them like follow up and do that homework, because I'm telling you, they won't know that like, this stuff is in place. So if they know, they can do the legwork on it.
And sometimes if it's in a smaller school district, it's an assistant superintendent in charge of curriculum, or there's grant writers in the district, you know, and they could be your neighbors, right?
Because exactly.
So you've been in this quote unquote business for a good while. You started out as a musician, as a trumpet player, am I right?
A bass player.
Bass player.
Yeah, I played saxophone in the band, but I also played bass. And really, that I was in the Air Force band with the bass in California. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then, moving into the administrative part of that, how many years in the administrative part of this business, quote unquote?
Yeah. So I guess 2001 or two, I went to LA Unified District office, and then 2009, I believe it is, or 10, around there, we focused on opening an elementary school. Yeah, in historic South Central LA.
And you were the principal of that school. So over 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So my last kind of reflective question is, people ask me this too, so I'm going to ask you, are we in a more proactive place for music education advocacy than we were, let's say, when, you know, you first started in the bigger picture business and the management and leadership? Where do you think we are?
Yeah, I just think that what I'm hearing less these days, and what I hear across the country, I hear less of that victimhood thing. You know, that like, oh, we're cutting the arts again. Oh, this, like the misery. I'm not saying it's not happening, because I do know of teachers and our colleagues who probably are, you know, hitting hard times in one way or another. But I would say the overarching picture of advocacy and how we're growing in terms of how we approach it has changed. Yeah, it's shifted from the victim mentality to being more ahead of the curve, so to speak. Just, I think in terms of like all of that, it's like everyone's starting to look more at the long game of doing this work instead of the immediate responsive reaction.
Yeah, I one of my mentors, Denny Sensenay from Wichita, Kansas. I think it is Wichita. Sensenay Music was on the NAMM board, and he coined the phrase that advocacy needs to be a wellness program, not an emergency room visit.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
That was my mantra. Instead of building a program or building a network, it's like, we have to be moving forward continually, seeking information, celebrating, creating more visibility, being part of the Best Communities program to bring you a national recognition. Anything that, you know, going and having a meeting at Boeing with every superintendent in the county and talking about the value of arts education, you know, all those things are leaning forward and saying, yes, hard times, and you know, hard times will always come. That's one thing that we can count on, but what we are in charge of and what we can be part of is this energy, this collective energy to do what is right for kids. And we know that they have to have, because they're wired for it, they have to have this music and arts experiences in their lives, or they're really not going to learn.
Right. And you know what? It's, if you build the infrastructure and you get parents involved and they find value in that, you get the school community finding value during those hard times, they're not going to cut anything. You know, hard choices will be made, but the old times or the old days when it's like, well, let's eliminate the arts thing right off the bat, having it built within to the culture and community of the school and the district, it's going to make it really hard for them to do that.
So this is the promise that you and I have, and in these last, we could say decades of our careers together, you and I are never going to whine, okay, Steve?
No.
Give us a final thought.
Final thought is definitely think in long terms. You know, think about the long game. Like the $1.4 million, I could just tell you, like, that thought process and that planning, that was over like a year and a half of just looking at what you need and what you want to get done in terms of the county or in terms of your school or your district. Get that plan in place, so when the opportunity arises, you can immediately go and do that thing and ask for that funding source. I mean, these are the things to think about in ways of being proactive. That's what it means to be proactive.
This has been just delightful, Steve, for you and I to spend this time together. You know, we don't get to do that much. You know, we generally arrive at an event, hustle onto a panel, and I say, thank you, see ya, and you go off and continue with the work. But so grateful that now you've moved into this national spot with Little Kids Rock. You're influenced moving across state level arts education networks, and certainly in these large metropolitan areas. And please know that NAMM and the NAMM Foundation is always standing by to share the good news, spread the good news, and help you in any way you can.
Well, thank you, Mary. Yeah, you know, this was really fun. And like you said, we're always on to the next thing in terms of our moving to our other responsibilities at these different events and things like that. But it's been really a pleasure to hang out and talk with you. So
to all of our listeners here at Talking at Music Education, please join me in thanking Steve Venz for being with us on Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.